Hi there, I'm Nihal and you're listening to the Rescue Tales podcast, the show dedicated to helping you settle your adopted rescue dog. In this episode, I chat with dog behaviourist Vivian Arzamanian about how to settle your adopted rescue dog if you live in a chaotic city. We also talk about how to better communicate with our dogs and what to do if your dog is a very persistent barker. As always, I hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi Vivian and welcome to the Rescue Tales podcast.
Hi, it's so nice to be here.
Great to have you. I'm super excited about our conversation because today we are talking about a couple of key topics, one of which is how people who live in busy, crowded, noisy, crazy, chaotic cities can settle their dogs, especially if they've adopted a rescue dog who's quite fearful. But before we jump into that, tell our listeners a little bit about you, what you do and who you are.
I'm Vivian Arzamanian, and I'm the owner and founder of Pumpkin Pups Dog Training, which I started in 2005. And I have always been a positive reinforcement trainer. Through my career, I've become more and more force-free along with my positive reinforcement work. That doesn't mean that dogs get to do anything. But all the management and the training is geared to set the dogs up for success and acknowledge who they are and where they're starting in their journey with their guardians, families, owners, and really help people kind of take a step back and see the dog in front of them, who is not always the dog that they imagined when they were adopting their dog. I live in Brooklyn in the US, in New York City, and we are, you know, everybody probably has their vision of New York and what it's like, but it's noisy and smelly and crowded and packed with people and dogs and tons of sounds. And that is a real challenge for many rescue dogs who come from much quieter environments, who haven't had the kind of exposures that they are suddenly hit with when they come to the city. So we can talk about the details of that later.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great segue into my first question, which is, you know, especially people who've adopted a dog who's quite shut down in the early days, because that does tend to happen. How is the dog perceiving all of these different, you know, noises, movements, all of these different triggers around them? Because I don't think we as dog guardians necessarily think of it from the dog's perspective enough. Like from the dog's perspective, like we're used to it. We're desensitized to all that noise and craziness. Maybe when we leave the city with somewhere quiet, I'm like, oh, this is so nice and quiet. But from the dog's perspective, help us understand a bit about how they might be perceiving all of that and how it might make them feel and therefore behave.
Right. Well, I think for a lot of dogs, they're actually quite, when we talk about shut down, it's really that I think of it sometimes as they have blinders on so that they almost don't perceive, and maybe their ears are a little stuffed up. It's a little bit like being a very shy person at a very big party. You might have a very big personality, but you're not going to show it in that party setting. And so the same thing is true for a newly adopted dog. And often people want to start training them instantly. And I'm more of the school of thought to say, make friends with them first. Let them know that you are nice, that you are gentle, that you predict food, that you have a happy voice, that you don't care if they know how to sit right now, unless they happen to be really great at sitting, and then give them cookies every time they do it to let them know that that is a really nice way to say please. And you start to build a conversation with the dog that way. Important to keep things predictable for these dogs. Don't have an introduce the dog to 50 family members on the first day. We do want them to meet the people who are going to be in their lives, but do it slowly, do it gently, do it outside. You give the dog treats when they see new people rather than having new people give the dog the treats. Those are the kinds of things. And people are often in a rush to get things going. And in my experience, the slower you go, the more progress the dog will actually make more quickly. Because if we overwhelm them, then they don't have a good way to process those experiences. And sometimes we find that then dogs will, who have seemed really quiet and calm and relaxed, suddenly become reactive or growl, or as they start to get a little bit more comfortable, notice more things, feel like they're in their a place where they belong, they're suddenly like, oh, you know, we don't love that. And people go, oh my God, the dog's growling. And I say, they're just saying, please step back, right? And if we can listen to them and help them through those things, we can resolve those issues without creating bigger problems.
What happens when you suppress that? When you say, you know, when you stop them from growling or stop the bark or stop the communication?
So I think one of the things that happens is you lose the opportunity to gain some really important information about a place that the dog needs help. So in a situation where the dog growls, like, I don't love it that the dog is growling. I'm not saying, oh, fine, but I am saying it is a normal communication when a dog feels uncomfortable. So what is the dog feeling uncomfortable about? Right. I mean, if a dog growls and snaps because they have a broken leg and somebody's moving them, right, that is not a training problem or a behavior modification problem. But if a dog is growling and snapping because they came over to you and, you know, lay down next to you and you petted them and all of a sudden they said, well, sorry, actually, I changed my mind. I didn't really mean, I wanted you to pet me when I came over and acted like a cuddly family member, then we have a problem, right? We have to say, you know, why is this happening? And what can we do to change the underlying emotions in the animal so that the animal is able to feel comfortable in what are very normal situations? And as dog owners, I mean, we expect dogs to be very compliant and to put up with a huge amount of stuff. And the vast majority of dogs actually do, right? But the dogs who haven't had the greatest start in life, the dogs whose genetics are really not conducive to being easygoing about everything, we have to look at those dogs and say, okay, like, you have some boundaries. We're going to respect your boundaries. We're going to try and make you as comfortable as can be with the things that make you uncomfortable. But we're also going to recognize that maybe you're a dog who never comes to a party. Or maybe you're a dog who, when you have a chew, you're in your pen in another part of the house and nobody talks to you until you're done, right? So there's a lot of, what's the personality we're dealing with? It's the way we are with our friends and our families. Hopefully we're not growling at them too much.
Depends who.
Exactly.
Depends who. But I think one of the things that you mentioned there is expectations, and we expect our dogs to be compliant. And one of the things that I learned is just take, especially when you're adopting a rescue dog and you have no idea what you're getting, is throw your expectations out the window. And the other thing that I've come to learn is I had this, and it sounds really stupid when it comes out my mouth, that just assume that dogs like to be pet. Some dogs don't. My dog doesn't. She likes to be scratched a certain place in her neck, but she doesn't like people touching, like stroking her head. She doesn't like it. She doesn't mind it when my husband does it. But, you know, she otherwise she doesn't. She feels like, you can see the body language shift. And it's just an assumption we have that we get to touch anyone's dog and they should just be fine with it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's so interesting because, you know, because just listening to your language, she really likes to be scratched under her chin or under her ear. She lets your husband pet her in more forward ways that invade her body space a little bit. She lets him do it, but does she wiggle and does she solicit it? I don't know. You have the answer to that. But it's so often, it just reminds me of hearing from clients who will say, she's fine. with this. He's fine with that, fine with another thing. And to me, fine is a little like beep that goes off in my brain and says, the dog is tolerating it, but they don't love it. You know, and we do things to dogs, and we expect dogs to tolerate things that we do that they don't adore. It's part of, you know, the life in a family. But there's a really nice thing that Grisha Stewart talks about, and many other trainers, of having a 3-second rule or a 5-second rule, where you kind of experiment with the animal, where you'll touch them in a certain way or you'll pet them in different parts of their body. And you do it for as short as 3 seconds, and you take your hand away. And what does the animal do? Do they come back and say, oh, please do it again? Or do they walk off? And with that, it's a very nice diagnostic to see what the dog enjoys. And, you know, you can get a rescue dog who's like, wants to be on your lap, kiss you, be the cuddliest thing in the world, right? Certainly not every rescue dog has issues or serious issues, but you know, many of them struggle in the beginning.
I love that diagnostic, because now I'm thinking of it, and I don't think Rosa actually lets my head. I think she solicits it, because what she'll do is she'll go up to him, she'll do a chin rest, and then he'll start to pet her, and then he'll stop because he's doing something, and then she'll poke him she'll kind of like with her nose, like lift his hand. Hey, I'm not done. And she does the same with the side scratch. So I suppose it's just something we kind of inherently like, do you like this kind of thing? But it's a great diagnostic. I love that. That's really helpful.
Right. Yeah. It's really, really super helpful.
So Vivian, let's just talk a little bit about some of the challenges or the behavior, specifically some of the behaviors that people might start to see with an adopted rescue dog who's come from maybe a more rural area. Like I talked to you about Rosa, my dog, who's come from the south of Spain, very rural, into Barcelona City, which is probably, you know, similar, maybe not as intense as New York. And in the beginning, she was very much like you described, kind of blinkers on, shut down, not reacting. But then, you know, probably about 5 months in, when she starts to settle and feel more comfortable expressing how she feels, and I'm delighted she expresses how she feels. I'm just not delighted about how she feels. I want to help her through some of that.
Right.
Is, you know, children, noisy, jumping around, lots of them at the same time. That's a big trigger. You know, gardeners in bright yellow uniforms doing their digging and stuff. That's a trigger. Sometimes other dogs can be a trigger. So, you know, a jogger running down the road and it's all happening. The garbage truck going by, you know, lifting the bins, making lots of banging noises. All of those are kind of triggers. And I know many people have dogs kind of who go through some of the same challenges. What can we as dog guardians or dog owners do to kind of, I suppose, maybe preempt them if that's possible? And then the second part of that question, I'm sorry, I know this is a loaded question, is how do we support them through, you know, so that they feel less anxious and they can enjoy their lives in the city?
Well, you haven't given me a lot of detail about Rosa, but it sounds like she'll bark and lunge when these things happen, right? So that's one direction that dogs will sometimes go in, right? The other direction that dogs may go in, and usually you'll see that sooner than we saw Rosa's reactivity, but with retreating. Refusing to go out, you know, throwing themselves down on the sidewalk and not wanting to move because they're so afraid. So, and I think the motivating factors are fear and anxiety and stress in both circumstances. And depending on the dog, they'll take a different tactic or, you know, a different stress relief response. And usually that fearful want to get away thing happens much earlier. Rosa was a few months in. So, you know, I think probably with Rosa, what I want to do with every dog, first of all, is I want to assume that they're uncomfortable looking at the dog, and I'm looking for signs of some reluctance, some ignoring of things that can look to that can look really good, except it's not so great because they're like, la, 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 I'm not paying attention. I'm not paying attention. I'm just going to keep moving. I'm just, you know, I'm not going to, I'm walking, I'm walking, I'm walking, I'm peeing and pooping, I'm walking, I'm walking, I'm walking, and not a lot, not loose body language, not curiosity. Those, you know, if I just thinking about all the things that are positive as opposed to okay, right? Which so many people don't know about and sort of get surprised the way you got surprised. So for the dog who keeps going and doesn't have that very fearful avoidance response, I'm just going to start with a lot of positive reinforcement training, pointing out to the dog, you know, oh my God, you sniffed that. That's so great. Have a treat. Oh, you looked at that and you raised your tail a little higher than it, than the down tail you've been walking around with. Great job. I'm going to be silly. I'm going to help the dog, you know, let's run this way. Let's run that way. Just like, and also part of what I'm doing is I'm getting their endorphins going, their positive endorphins going. I'm saying, oh, you're so brilliant for all of these things that we take for granted. It's a little bit like the yes and no training. And also, I don't know if you got to read about Smart Times 50, which is this idea of with any dog, but especially with a new dog, setting aside X amount of treats in the day, where yes, of course you've heard of it in different ways, and you're just going to reinforce random acts of good behavior. Oh my God, you lay down quietly at this moment. Oh, you sat at this door. Oh, you came over and sniffed me, good girl, right? And toss a treat, and just helping them learn kind of the outlines and rules of life, and that you are the person they turn to for pretty much everything. So, and that's what food and play and praise do for us with new dogs. It's the fastest way to build a really nice relationship and a nice conversation with the dog. And I think I might have gotten a little off track here.
Look, it's not off track at all, and I think it's all incredibly relevant, and I think it's, I just want to kind of reinforce what you've said there, because I think often we think, we being, you know, new dog owners, first time dog guiding like myself, is at the beginning kind of think that the treats are for the training, and the training being sit, stay, you know, walk next to me, whatever. But actually, I mean, I scrapped doing all of that very early on because I'm like, this just doesn't feel right. And I mostly operated from gut rather than, I just didn't have the education. So I'm like, well, does this feel right or not? Or before assessing the podcast, but just reinforcing the things that we might take for granted, like them, you know, the tail's gone up a little bit. You've relaxed. Hey, this is good. This is good. I've been doing this recently with Rosa. Whenever we see a child, you know, in the distance, you've seen them, and Anthony's been teaching this lady, like child, and give her a good treat because she didn't react. So I just love that. And I just want listeners to kind of think about how they could just be reinforcing, you know, the behaviors that the dogs are exhibiting to overcome the fear or the anxiety that they have, because it really does work. Like now when we walk past a kid, Rosa will look up and be like, hey, where's my treat? I'm like, this is exactly what I want you to do.
Yeah, exactly what you want. Exactly what you want. And that, and you have, frankly, you have taught her a behavior. You've also dealt with her emotional brain, but you've also taught her a behavior in the process, which is to look to you and without prompting, because the child is the cue to look at you, right? And how beautiful is that? Because very often trainers will tell people to teach their dog a watch be cue, which can be useful, but for dogs who are feeling uncomfortable, it's so much more powerful to have the thing that they've been uncomfortable about to be the cue to look at you, because then you don't have to watch the environment so much, because Rosa's saying, Mom, did you see it? There was a kid, right? Where's the chicken?
Yeah.
So, you know, that is sort of the power of that. And I just wanted to go back to what you said about, you know, starting out wanting to train polite behaviors, right? If you can do the relationship part first, all of those polite behaviors just start to fall into place and become really, really easy to reinforce. Where when you start with the training a behavior part before you have the other stuff, the dog's kind of like, but I feel too stressed. I don't understand your body language. Why are you asking me to do this over and over? And it's not fun, right? Mm-hmm. By the time there's a relationship, when you say to the dog, sit, she's like, oh, sure, I can do that. Yeah. I can do it even longer if you give me a few more treats. Where before you might be, you know, sit and, you know, really trying hard. And the dog is so uncomfortable that their thinking brain really is not available yet.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the cart before the horse.
That's great advice. And I was just thinking as you were talking about, you know, the sit and people trying really hard with the treat. And I've seen people do things like with puppies to kind of step on the leash. And it's really weird. I don't understand how the mechanics of it works, but just trying to kind of force them into a sit or a lie down. And actually, you're so right, because when I stopped trying to work on those basic commands, because I just stopped and asked myself the question, like, why does she, the only reason I need her to, the valid reason I need her to sit is that she has no concept of like cars are dangerous. So for a traffic light, I don't want to have to hold her on a really tight short leash. I just need her to sit so I'm comfortable, so she's not going to just zoom into the road. So
absolutely,
it's just also thinking about, why do I need to train this behavior? Obviously, if your dog's like jumping at people and stuff, you want to train them not to be doing right. that. But I think right. we just think that, oh, you know, we just have to train these behaviors. Like, yes, but why? Just
exactly.
Why is really important.
Right. And what you just said made me think of something else, which is that the training, that very often people go into the training part with this idea that they have to do this kind of training so that they are in charge of the dog.
Mm.
And that puts a huge amount of pressure, and it puts perhaps puts the dog's non-responsiveness or lack of enthusiasm into some categories with negative labels, like the dog is stubborn, or the dog is dominant, or the dog is this or that, where really the dog is just confused.
Mm-hmm.
And the directions that are being given and the way that it's being asked is just not clear to the dog. Once we're in a power struggle with a dog, we're the losers. So are they.
Mm.
But we hold all power, actually, over their entire lives, right? And where and when they eat and what they eat and when they get a walk and blah, 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 right? And so, you know, we do have a huge amount of power, and we often give dogs too much power in our brains, you know, by thinking that they're trying to run us, which they're not.
Yeah, probably one of the biggest misconceptions out there. I still see it all the time. I'm sure you do. It's like people trying to force the dogs into a lie down to, you know, say, oh, I'm the boss, you know, I'm dominating you. And it's not.
Yeah, or jerking the leash 100 times when the dog puts the slightest pressure on the leash. And, you know, and it's all kind of backwards, because using a loose leash and taking advantage of moments when there's a loose leash, and for a huge number of dogs, as soon as you loosen up the leash and don't keep it really tight, they start to be much more responsive to the pressure on the leash. Mm. But if you allow the leash to be tight all the time, they just learn to pull on it, no matter how uncomfortable they are and how rasping for breath they are. So training needs to be much more nuanced, I think, and recognize what's really going on with the dogs.
Yeah.
And that they're very emotional beings who need our help to interpret the world.
Yeah, I think the loose leash walking, it also pulls like crazy. She's a lot better now. It's taken 9 months of solid training, and it's still a work in progress. So my point is, with some dogs, they just pick it up really quickly.
Absolutely.
Maybe I'm not doing the training as well as I should be, but it's taking us a while. And I think it's sometimes this frustration to have these quick wins and solve problems immediately sometimes causes people to go down some of the more aversive routes because you feel like you're getting an immediate result, but you're not.
Right.
And I think the other thing also, I tried to think about when she's pulling, and maybe this is wrong and tell me if it is, but in my mind, I think sometimes she's pulling for a valid reason. Like if she has a set, she doesn't like to do her toilet business on the pavement or the road. She has to do it in like sand or grass or something. So she's pretty desperate. She wants to get to that piece of grass or gravel really quick. She starts pulling. I kind of feel like it's only fair for me to catch up with her because she's so uncomfortable and desperate. And I just kind of feel like it's not fair for me to state, no, and this is when we're going to do the tree and you have to walk with me. And I just felt, well, if I was really desperate to go to the loo, I'd be really frustrated if someone tried to keep me on a leash and start saying, this is how you walk on the leash. I was like, I don't need to be trained now. I just need to go for a week. So I kind of just think that maybe sometimes we have to be a bit forgiving and sympathetic and empathetic, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And also, you know, is there like some really hot smell over there that they need to rush over? You know, and there are, of course, you know, there are safety issues, right? With that kind of thing. But I definitely, you know, sometimes, you know, if I'm working with a client on loose leash walking, I'm going to say, does your dog need to pee or poop right now? And they'll say yes. And I'll say, well, just let them, you know, let them do whatever they need to do, get that done. And then we'll get to work because how can we expect to bring training into this moment of urgency? And I think if you can get the training in other areas, you can potentially start to work it into the harder parts, right? But you can't start at the hardest part, which is the dog needing to relieve themselves. Yeah. And loose leash walking is one of the hardest things to accomplish because you're dealing with more distractions than for any other behavior where you're starting the baby steps of training. Right. And also people have agendas when they're on a walk with their dog. And it's not always that it's the walk is for the dog. They've got someplace to go. They've got something to do. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and if dogs don't get enough chances to sniff and meander around, et cetera, it can be really hard. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I'm thinking of also is I recently fostered a dog who's 80 pounds, very big guy, and lovely, lovely dog in the house, and incredibly aroused and predatory around birds and squirrels.
Oh.
So, and he's looking for birds in the trees and he's hearing birds. So in the beginning, I don't think that he had been outside very much when I started to foster him. And in the beginning, he was completely unmanageable on the leash, completely unmanageable. So I was lucky that I didn't have to walk him and I could use my backyard and let him kind of get his bird yayas out. So that, you know, then a week in, he's kind of a little better with birds and I've had a chance to work with him and build a relationship. And then we can start taking one walk a day where, you know, I'm ready and got my center of gravity going, et cetera, and work on, can I at least get the dog to take a treat once in a while? Because he's so obsessed with the birds and squirrels that the treats are just like, who cares? But even for dogs like that, I'm going to stick the treat into their mouth. And if it falls on the ground, that's okay. because I know if I keep doing it enough, eventually they're going to absentmindedly swallow the treat. Mm. And then it's going to, you know, and it's going to start to, you know, get settled in their brain that actually, you know, treats come, you can wait, you can take a treat, you can go slower, you can still enjoy the bird without pulling Vivian to the ground.
We don't want you to be pulled to the ground. It's repetition, isn't it?
It's repetition, it's consistency, it's management. You know, with a dog like that, if you don't have the backyard and you must take them on walks, then, you know, sometimes equipment like, a halty or a gentle lead or a head halter kind of thing can give you more control. But those need to be introduced carefully so that the dog is not super distressed by having that on their faces.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Okay. And one of the things I did want to talk with you about, Vivian, is a wonderful blog post on your website, and I'll link to it in the show notes. I just decided to call it No. I can't remember what the title was, but in my head
it's yes in quotes versus no in quotes training.
Okay. So tell us about that, because when I read that, I had such an aha moment of, and this is something me and my husband have been debating for a while, is that when you say no to a behavior you don't want, why does a dog keep doing it again in the future? So just maybe summarize that blog and kind of the key takeaway from that, and help us understand why no isn't teaching the dog not to repeat a behavior that we find undesirable.
Okay. So when we say no to a dog, when we say leave it to a dog, when we say off to a dog who's jumping, and those are all in our minds, we're saying no in one way or another. And in our minds, we are saying, and don't do it again. And the dog does not really have the don't do it again concept. If we don't teach them something alternate to do, and also if we don't manage their behavior so that they cannot keep repeating the thing that we're saying no or leave it or off about. So if a dog is countersurfing and we say off, the dog perceives off to be kind of like sit or down or anything else. Yes, they'll get their paws off. But they also very quickly learn that jumping on the counter gets attention. So it is a surefire way to get mom or dad or the kids to go, Rufus is up on the counter again. And that is very exciting to Rufus. And Rufus may also get some chicken from the counter or a scrap of bread or something else that is reinforcing. So, and if Rufus is a tall dog, we have a really big problem, right? So for things like that, close the kitchen door when you can't be there, because the dog is never going to leave chicken on the counter if no one is there. If you're in the kitchen with Rufus, you're going to be teaching Rufus to lie down on a mat while Rufus is in the kitchen. And you're going to reward Rufus for lying down on a mat in the kitchen, either with a long-lasting chew, or you're going to have the mat close enough to use that while you're cutting vegetables, Rufus is lying on the mat and you are giving him treats often enough that he's willing to not keep bouncing up. Because if he bounces up and then you tell him to lie down, he learns that bounce up, lie down equals a treat. So we want to give him treats often enough in the beginning that he doesn't think about getting up. Even that when you say, okay, we're done, Rufus goes like, really? I would like to stay here and get some more treats. And if you're consistent about this, Rufus will learn to lie on a mat in the kitchen when you are cooking. And slowly over time, you can reduce the frequency with which you give the treats, or you can give Rufus stuffed Kong or a licky mat or a long lasting chew so he keeps himself busy while you're cooking. And that is an example of, you know, of management plus training when you're doing the mat work. Closing the door to the kitchen or finding a way to block it off or keeping the counters completely clear, which is close to impossible for a normal human being, are all, you know, strategies that actually work very well. So, and do you have an example of something that you're thinking of where people would use no and how I should recommend working on it?
Well, I suppose one of the things is, like, for example, a dog, you know, barking at a trigger. I see it a lot. Like, someone's like, no, no, no. Or the dog jumping on, like, I get it a lot. I go into the dog park and I have a treat bag that I clip onto my bag because I always have treats with me. And I go into the dog park and I always forget to take it off and put it in my pocket until the dog jumps on me. And when I go to the dog park, I always wear clothes I expect are going to be washed. So if a dog jumps on me, I'm like, it's fine. Yeah. The dog, it's my fault. The treats are there. And then the other one's just like, no, 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 get down. No, get down. And then the dog keeps repeating, because I'll go to the same dog park, it will keep repeating the behavior. And it's the same risk. And we find that as dog guardians, we kind of end up in this vicious cycle of like, say no, and then getting more frustrated because the dog's still doing it next time and the time after and the time after. Like, why are they learning? I keep saying no.
Right. So, of course, in the dog park, it's very hard for us to educate other owners because mostly they don't want to hear it. And you just make enemies instead of friends by making recommendations. So, like, for the dog park thing, one thing that I realized is because I always have treats in the dog park and other owners normally don't have treats in the dog park, which is part of the problem. Part of the problem that they're having, right, is they can't just say, oh, Fido, come out, you know, leave her alone and come over here and, you know, get a treat. Or Fido, come on, get your ball and do something constructive, right? Mm-hmm. But as a person carrying treats, I have learned that if, as you say, you put them away and you simply ignore the behavior yourself, those dogs usually give up very quickly.
Yeah.
Because they don't have a reinforcement history with you giving them treats, right? They see you as an opportunity. But as soon as you say, sorry, you know, I don't give treats to any dogs in the dog park, I only give treats to my dog, you become very boring. Mm. Right. So, which is ignoring a behavior. And then also not reinforcing it, which everyone can use under certain circumstances. Your description of alert barking, which is emotional barking, in my mind, you know, it's what dogs are meant to do. They hear a sound, and it is their job to let you know that something is going on. So there are, and depending on how emotional the dog, you might need to do counter conditioning to certain sounds, the way you did with Rosa with children. A child predicts a treat, a certain type of noise predicts a treat, and it can be worked on separate from the real event even. So if door knocking sets the dog off, you can just knock gently on the table and give a treat and knock gently on the table and give a treat. And then you can work to having somebody knock on the door and you give a treat. And as long as it's done in such a way that the dog really understands the knock happens first, then the treat arrives. And then when there's no knocking, there's no treats. And then the knock happens again and treats arrive. For some dogs, you can eliminate the behavior altogether. For some dogs, it can help make them more easily distracted from the sounds. And then if they're more easily distracted, then they come to you and you ask them to do a few things and you give them some treats and you tell them that you're so grateful that they let you know that there was a noise in the hallway And now it's time to settle down. There also are ways to teach a quiet. Again, that's not going to work for terribly emotional barking, but it might for, you know, lower level kinds of barking. And barking's a really interesting topic. And I won't go down that rabbit hole right now, but there are lots of, where I could. I mean, there are lots of different kinds of barking. There's demand barking, which you would deal with in a very different way, right? So, because in that case, barking is being used as an instrument to get something, which is very different than alert barking, which is doing their job, right? So if it's barking as a way of communication, then there are other ways to work on it.
I feel like we could do a whole episode on barking.
Absolutely. So let's save that for another day.
Absolutely. If you'd come back, I would be absolutely delighted.
I would love to come back. This is my favorite kind of thing to do.
Wonderful. I do have a question for you on, you know, just some of the behaviors that we tend to say no to expecting the dog would learn. Say, for example, a behavior like digging. So digging, like, for example, I've moved somewhere and I have a backyard and it's a rented property and I cannot have Rosa digging holes in the garden because that's going to cost me an arm and a leg. It's not my backyard. So I can't even section off an area. And she's not tried to dig so far. In the dog park, she can dig to her heart's content. So is that just then about management? Just making sure, like, I keep an eye on where I don't leave it unsupervised. And then if I do start seeing it digging, I redirect her attention. Or how do you manage that kind of work? So behavior you don't want to stop altogether because it's still something I don't leave to you.
Right. Well, you'll never stop digging altogether unless you know, there were horrible punishments associated with it. So I don't think you have to worry about that she would stop digging in the dog park if you work on some things with your backyard. So some of the things that I think about let's say there was a certain area that was very interesting to her and you saw her, you know, have a moment where she was thinking about digging. If it were possible to set up some sort of barrier so she can't get into that spot. And then but even more important, I would say, if she's in the backyard, does she like to play fetch? So have the backyard be a place that you play fetch with her, or have the backyard be a place where she can have a chew toy, or you find entertainments for her there that she associates with doing in the backyard, and then she won't make her own entertainment, hopefully, by digging a hole. I have control over my outdoor space because it's my house. I don't have a lot of space, but I have done things where, you know, and everything in my life is geared towards looking good, but still recognizing that I have dogs who would like to dig holes. And I have one in particular. And so I have done things with putting down flagstone around a place in one spot where she was just endlessly digging by a rhododendron and it was going to kill the plant, right? So I put flagstones down. There's still enough room between them that, you know, when it rains, the plants get watered, but it's not a place for her to dig. And then she found another spot and I let her dig there a little bit. And then I just pushed the dirt back and the mulch back in place. And somehow or other, it just never got very deep. But what in a situation where you don't even have that level of flexibility, the dog just needs to have other entertainments, is there an area in the yard that's cement or stone and she loves to lie there in the sun and soak up the sun? Is there a way to gate that area off so she can have it and you don't have to supervise her? But otherwise, supervision is necessary. Again, if the yard was yours, you could create a digging pit for her if there was enough room. So there are a lot of good creative strategies. And I've also put up very lightweight inexpensive, you know, faux wrought iron fencing in mm-hmm. certain areas where I don't want dogs going in.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
there's a lot of the area where they can do whatever they like.
Yeah. And it's important for them to have that freedom, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I wish they could dig really deep holes because especially one of my dogs would be very happy.
There's a hole that Rose has dug in the dog park that's so deep the all you can see when she's digging in it is her tail sticking.
I love it.
And there was an incident. This is just a really random story, but it just really made me laugh. Sometimes if she hears another dog barking and like a dog has seen something that triggers that dog and starts right. barking, and then also hears another dog barking, she just starts barking as well. And one day, and I used to think that she was okay, so that triggered, that's also triggering her, whatever that dog is barking at a person, someone like that. Right. And then one day she was in her hole digging, so she couldn't even see what this dog, and the dog starts barking, and she's like digging, so she can't remember.
She was multitasking.
My thoughts are sweet. You have no idea what you're barking at, Dustin.
That's hysterical. But you know, the other thing is, and I don't know where I read this, but it's some sort of study where dogs understand certain types of different types of barking. And so, and they will make a choice about whether they want to, you know, whether that gets them going or not gets them going. So clearly that dog was saying something that meant something to Rosa.
Yeah. And I also, and I don't know if there's any, you know, validity to this, but in my mind, I wondered if, you know, just like we recognize each other's voices, if they recognize each other's barks, and this is a dog she knows because it's one of the dogs she plays with every day.
Right.
It could be different than if it was a stranger dog that she doesn't know.
Absolutely.
There's a whole world inside their heads that we have no clue about. It's just sort of fascinating.
No clue.
Yep.
Yep. Okay. No, we all, you know, we're sort of deducing things all the time from their behavior and what we see and patterns and all that. It's very interesting.
Yeah. Amazing. This conversation has been fascinating. Vivian, before we go, tell our listeners where they can find more about you and your services. And also if you do online sessions for those of us who aren't in New York to come and see you in person.
Okay, great. So the name of my business is Pumpkin Pups Dog Training. And the website is super simple. It's pumpkinpups.com. And so you can easily, you know, people can easily get in touch with me. And I do have a team of trainers who work with me. We offer online puppy classes, online Manners One classes, and some other offerings. And we do also offer virtual training individually. If you're close enough to us, we start with a virtual session and we can see you in person. But we have had, you know, huge success just working virtually with people who need our help. So let us know if we can be of any assistance.
Wonderful. I will link to your website in the show notes of this episode and the contact details so people can get in touch.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Thank you so much for taking the time.
You're so welcome. And we didn't even get to half the things we wanted to talk about.
I know, we just went in all sorts of directions.
Yes.
If you'd be happy to come back, I would love to have you back to talk about behavior adjustment training and barking.
I think one.
An episode on barking would be incredibly helpful for listeners as well.
Okay. Well, let's talk.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Vivian.
Well, this has been wonderful. Thank you.